Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We are joined by Gordon Chang, the recent curator, as they call it, of an important conversation at the Conservative Political Action Conference. A great friend of this program, a highly successful commentator, pundit, columnist, author, including of two very important books, The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Gordon, I was very privileged to have appeared with you as part of that curated panel with John Bolton and our friend Steve Moore as well. But I just wanted to salute you in particular because I thought your remarks about what a threat China really represents these days there at CPAC were particularly strong and needed. So congratulations and thanks for letting me be part of it.
Well, thanks, Frank. And I was honored to be on the panel with you. And your remarks were strong and indeed had to be heard. And I'm glad that we're getting all of your thoughts, because as you point out, we are at risk.
We are indeed. The top news maybe of the moment is the very symbolic effort of the United States to respond to some of this. So maybe we could start with that. The USS Carl Vinson, nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, and two of its escorts are in Da Nang Harbor for the first time since the United States withdrew from that harbor and South Vietnam. It's clearly the case that the Trump administration is very concerned about what the Chinese up to, as are some of China's neighbors. Give us sort of the context for all this, and then we'll drill down on China and what it's up to at the moment that's prompting this.
Yeah, the context, as you point out, is that there's a growing relationship between the United States and Vietnam. And what's also interesting is that Vietnam is also working very closely with two of our very important friends, Japan and India. So there is this growing connection. And the one thing this says to China is that the region is now starting to coalesce to contain Chinese expansionism. And however strong the Chinese are, they're not stronger than the forces arrayed against them, because we see not only the United States with its Quad partners, Japan, India, and Australia, but also other countries are now working with the Quad. And this is an extremely good development for us.
It is. As Gordon, we were discussing with Kevin a moment ago, the Quixi Journal of the Chinese Communist Party recently put out the kind of counter strategy that the Chinese seem to have in mind, using, among other things, economic warfare, as I say, unrestricted warfare against us. To the extent that this is coming against the backdrop of clearly the very considerable consolidation of power by Xi Jinping, a nationalist with clearly ambitions well beyond his own region. Do you see in this ascendancy to what amounts to the presidency for life stature of Xi and the announced decision to greatly increase the investment in the Chinese military evidence that this is going to take a turn in terms of old-fashioned conflict, not just of the economic variety?
Oh, certainly, Frank. The Chinese military budget was today announced to increase this year 8.1%. And that number probably doesn't include acquisition costs. And acquisition costs, we know, have been going up even faster than that 8.1%. Is in fact growing somewhere nominally, maybe 3%, maybe 3.5%. This shows that the Chinese military is getting bigger and bigger slice of China's resources. And this indicates the growing strength of generals and admirals in the Chinese political system. This is one of the most dangerous trends in the world today, with the Chinese military driving Beijing's external policies in extremely disturbing directions. So as you point out, this is not just economic warfare. This is not just political warfare. This could very well end up being a crisis of two militaries coming together, fighting each other. And probably if that happens, we'll get involved.
The kinetic kind, indeed. Well, if we're not the immediate target, that also is a possibility, I guess. But Gordon, just your thoughts. You've written, of course, about the collapse of China, and I know that there's a lot of contrary indicators to this, but What does it mean, as you see it, that a fellow like Xi is now effectively a dictator without check?
The reason why this is such a critical trend is because Xi Jinping, in his 5 years as China's leader, has been pushing the country in all the wrong directions. So we see not only a much more belligerent external policy, trying to grab territory from neighbors, trying to close off the global commons, he's also closing China up. He's closing its market to foreigners. He's trying to combat and demonize foreign influences. There's no good trends in China today because of Xi Jinping. And, you know, we've seen this before, the Japanese military in the 1930s, the German military in the 1930s. This could very well be a comparable development because, as you point out, this could end up in military conflict very soon. You know, people say China doesn't want a war, but China is doing things that will provoke a war. And we've seen this in history before.
Not only that it's behaving provocatively, but it is also, it seems, taking every imaginable step to prepare for war as well, and not just war against Vietnam or even Japan or other neighbors, but against the United States Navy and our homeland. Ominous indeed. And Gordon Chang, let me talk with you about one of the other manifestations of this Chinese threat axis. That is the kind of splinter movement, if I can use an old Maoist term, that North Korea represents. As we're speaking, a South Korean delegation is in Pyongyang. It is part and parcel of the charm offensive that began with the Olympics a couple of weeks ago. What's going on there, Gordon, and what does it mean for the U.S.-South Korean partnership and security arrangements?
A high-level South Korean delegation is now meeting with Kim Jong-un, the North Korean ruler. That delegation will come to Washington and brief President Trump. What the South Koreans are trying to do is to establish a role as mediator between North Korea and the United States. This is, to me, a troubling development because we've got 28,500 service personnel on the peninsula. We're the only nation pledged to defend South Korea. And I don't know why we're trying to defend a mediator. President Moon Jae-in of South Korea is very much a person who does not believe in the United States. Fortunately, the South Korean people don't believe in their president when it comes to this issue. So it's important for us to win hearts and minds there. But there are a lot of forces in play right now. President Trump talked about the North Koreans contacting him a little while ago. There's a lot of things happening. We don't know how all of this will shake out. But it looks like this crisis could very well be coming to a head in the not too distant future. And by that, I mean the next couple months.
And coming to a head may take the form, it sounds like, Gordon, of yet another negotiation with the North Koreans, either engineered by the South Koreans and involving others or bilateral between the two of them, possibly, it seems unlikely, but possibly involving direct talks between the United States and North Korea. But we've seen this movie before. Could you just give us a quick recap on how these negotiations have worked out in the past?
The North Koreans have never honored their promises to the United States or the international community when it's come to their nuclear weapons program. I mean, they haven't honored promises at all on any issue. But this goes back to the 1980s. The Trump administration has been trying to cut off money flows to North Korea. That's having an effect. We can see it from all sorts of anecdotal evidence. And the only way that we could ever have successful discussions with the North Koreans is when they know they have no choice but to give up their weapons. They're not there yet. The Trump administration is pushing them in that direction. But we're also going to have to impose costs on North Korea's backers, primarily Moscow and Beijing. When we do that, and when we close off trade from North Korea to the rest of the world, then we have a chance of settling this without the use of force. But we are a long way from there, Frank.
Yeah, there was an important piece, I think, on the front page of the Washington Post, if I'm not mistaken, yesterday, about North Korea's success in working with Russia to get coal sold, even as it's supposed to be sanctioned. Gordon, so much more to talk with you about. Thank you very much for joining us. And again, I salute your leadership at the Conservative Political Action Conference last week and look forward to talking with you again next week. Next up, we'll speak with Rick Manning about this transaction involving the 5G technology and what it could mean for all of us, right after this.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.